Buddy Dieter Kurtenbach, joined by Mark Medina here at Scotiabank Arena. That's what we're calling it now, Mark. It used to be the Air Canada Center for many years. Now it's the Scotiabank Arena in Toronto, Ontario.
I just hope they give us some commercials now.
Commercials of what?
Well, we just gave them a free plug.
I'm just trying to name the arena, man. Like, listen, Oracle has been getting plugs from us for years. I would think that our IT solutions would be solved by now. But, yeah, it doesn't matter. We're at the main arena in Toronto, where the Toronto Raptors just beat the Golden State Warriors 118-109 in a fairly fascinating Game 1 of the NBA Finals. Oh boy, are the overreactions going to come off of this one. Me and everybody else seemingly with the ability to type, I have not checked the French or the Spanish language yet, but and Lord knows where else. But seemingly everyone wrote the same column immediately after the game, which is, the Warriors aren't better without Kevin Durant. Well, no duh. Having one of the greatest players of all time on your team, usually a boon to success. But indeed, there were many moments in this game where you thought to yourself, you know who'd be nice if the Warriors could trot him out there right now? This Kevin Durant fella. He'd be pretty good in a muck-it-up, slog-it-out game against what was honestly a fairly, and this is something we knew, a worthy adversary in the Toronto Raptors, who played the game of all games from the Toronto Raptors' perspective. Ultimately, I walk away from Game 1 with somewhat of the same mindset as Draymond Green, which I guess is a compliment to myself, because I think Draymond's a basketball genius. So if I'm ever on the same wave like this Draymond, I'm going to take it, which is, it wasn't good, but it could have been a lot worse when you think about the margin and the fact that the Warriors just were consistently looming without ever really putting their act together. And two, there are so many areas that the Warriors can improve upon going into a game two, which is now really pivotal for this series. Whereas I just don't know if the Raptors can actually play any better. I think that they gave the Warriors their best shot from game one, and the Warriors, you look at just the litany of areas that they can improve upon, that they should improve upon, even marginal improvements across the board could really make a huge difference in a game that didn't have that much of a difference despite the disparity in the two teams sort of maximizing their talent level. Mark, what was your big takeaway from this game one, other than the wonderful rendition of O Canada and the fact that whatever the hell we're calling this building is one of the best, if not the best, basketball arena, let's just say, in the Eastern Conference? But it's hard to say that. It's not the best environment we've been in all year.
Yeah, well, beyond you addressing kind of the ultimate straw man argument that the media loves to bring up and then knock down, I think this was a these are the two things I take away from. I obviously always knew that the Warriors are better with Kevin, and when that whole narrative was coming around, we've talked about in the podcast, we made it emphatically clear, hey, you need some context here. It's one thing to do this game six against Houston, or you're just playing out of your mind, and then against an undermanned team in Portland. We always kept saying, hey, Toronto is going to be a more important test, and I think that illustrated that, you know, in the regular season, the Warriors would have games like this where, you know, whether they're playing through mud or they're not playing hard enough, that Kevin could bail them out. And I think you could argue he could have bailed them out tonight. Mm-hmm. But I think the more important thing going in is there was a lot of things that they didn't really seem prepared for. Part of it, they had talked a lot about the fact that they're not really familiar with this Toronto team because they're so used to playing Cleveland in June for the past 4 years. And also, when they played them in the regular season, it didn't really mean much, not just because it's regular season games, but it wasn't the same personnel. The first game, Kevin Durant, ironically enough, was playing, mm-hmm. but Steph Curry, Draymond Green, and DeMarcus Cousins weren't. And then in the second game, the Warriors just laid an egg. Kawhi Leonard wasn't even on the floor. Neither was DeMarcus Cousins. They had the three other All-Stars, but it was one of those games that they just didn't have it. So I think what this means for Game 2 is now they're more aware of everything. You saw improvement, I think, throughout the game of how they defended. And the third thing, one of their Achilles' heels, the turnovers, that's an easy thing to correct. And I imagine the Warriors are going to win Game 2 and they'll be fine.
Yeah, yes and no on the turnover thing. I totally agree with you that is totally the Warriors' situation, or at least it should be. But this Toronto defense, I mean, you talk about the Warriors offense right now, and it's a perimeter offense to the point where Jordan Bell gets the start here in game one. Steve Kerr just leaning into going five out from the get-go. We're going to go small ball. We're going to try to run Marc Gasol off the court. Didn't exactly work, but you can see where he's going. You're not going to sort of try to match up. You're going to play to your strengths. But the Warriors' offense, where it's this high-motion Steph Curry pick-and-roll stuff, all perimeter, all on the outside, that is exactly what Toronto does so well on defense. They might have the best perimeter defense in the NBA when you have Kawhi Leonard, who I think is the greatest perimeter defender that's ever lived. I mean, the stuff that he can do is incredible. And he's definitely on two bum legs right now. He looked really like a shell of himself, and he still affected the game in so many positive ways in game one. I don't know if we're ever going to get 100% or even close to 100% Kawhi Leonard in this series, but whatever he is at, he's still going to be really damn good. You then have Danny Green and Pascal Siakam. Let's talk about Pascal Siakam for a second, because not only was he preposterous on the defensive end, he had a couple of blocks that were just jaw-dropping. He also had one of the greatest offensive games in the history of the NBA Finals. That's not hyperbole. Guys who have gone for 35-5 with two blocks and two made threes, it's like a who's who in NBA history. I'm just going to go off the top of my head off of this stat that I saw earlier from Roto World. It's Michael Jordan, Larry Bird, Kevin Durant. I think Magic did it. Let's just say that Pascal Siakam is now on that list. And Pascal Siakam is the guy who, when you say one of these things is not like the other, you immediately point to him. I love Pascal Siakam. I've been talking up Pascal Siakam for months now. Some of the other shows that I do, the radio hits and stuff, the Game Theory podcast that I do with my friend Sam Vecini, Pascal Siakam is my dude. This is the greatest game Pascal Siakam will ever play, period. The Warriors have never allowed someone to shoot this effectively against them in the Steve Kerr era. 838 games, no one's done anything like Pascal Siakam did tonight. This was a one-off. And that's not to say he'll be bad, but he'll never be this great again, if for no other reason than Draymond Green said that he's going to pay more attention. And I think that highlights so much of what the Warriors' problems were tonight. Yes, totally agree with you. They got a lot better as the game went along. But their transition defense was a joke. A total joke. And Siakam is stupid fast. He create, you know, the Raptors did the thing that the Warriors usually do so well. Defense turning into offense. And then they also were able to control the pace by slowing things down on the offensive end and mucking things up defensively for the Warriors when they had the ball. It was the perfect game plan, and the fact that the Warriors only lost by 9 is a testament to, frankly, how good the Warriors are. Because the Raptors should have, with all of the things that went in their favor, blown out the Warriors in this game. And instead, the Warriors looked like they were constantly going to get over. It was just, they were one or two possessions away. And the Raptors had to land counterpunch after counterpunch after counterpunch in order to just fend off a Warriors team that didn't know, like, it didn't look like it knew what the hell it was doing. So I have to agree with you. I think that the Warriors do take game two. What were your thoughts on Siakam? What were your thoughts on Kawhi Leonard's offensive game tonight? Because those are going to be the two things I think everyone's going to be talking about for the next 72 hours or so.
Yeah, well, the Warriors rightfully came into the game knowing that Kawhi Leonard's the guy that they have to worry about, and so they doubled him immediately, and it obviously worked to Kawhi Leonard's standards. I mean, he finished 5 of 14. Now, it all came about, what did the Warriors give up? And they did two things. One, I mean, Siakam was partly a beneficiary of Leonard. He was partly a beneficiary of the Warriors committing turnovers. And also, he was partly a beneficiary of what they also did with Marc Gasol. You've often referenced what Ron Adams had done against Tony Allen. Mm-hmm. The best defense is no defense. They basically dared those guys to shoot. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of times, like the Raptors opened this game almost looking like the Houston Rockets, where like shooting a bunch of threes.
Exactly.
And I think that as the Warriors are going through that in real time, they're thinking, that's cute. Keep shooting. But then they kept going in. So I think the game plan made sense, but obviously the Raptors kind of tilted it on its head a little bit.
Siakam is one of the worst above-the-break three-point shooters in the NBA. He shot 26% on them. just shy of 100 attempts, 26% in the regular season in the playoffs. He went 2-for-2 tonight on above the break. Marc Gasol is a hyper-professional player. I don't think anyone has a bad word to say about Marc Gasol as a person, as an NBA guy. A lot of respect for him in the league. But yeah, the Warriors are just going to be like, Mark, if you want to shoot 6 3-pointers, feel free, my friend. And he made 4. And it's like, well, damn, I don't know what we're supposed to do, not let Marc Gasol shoot 3s. At the same time, a lot of these choices, you might say, a lot of it was just the Warriors being lazy on defense, which is kind of unacceptable for game one of the NBA Finals. You can chalk it up to rust. And I think a lot of the players did. Steve Kerr refused to do so because I thought Steve was kind of chippy today in the post-game presser. And I like a good chippy Steve Kerr every now and again. But like Draymond and Jordan Bell, from what I saw and heard, they were both like, oh, yeah, that layoff was terrible for us. Like, we didn't know what the hell was going on for the first. Like, we forgot how to basketball in that period of time. So there's that.
I'm not going to buy that, though, because they were talking about how this 9-day layoff was so great for them, and then all of a sudden it wasn't.
Listen, I'll tell you this. I went to New York for 2 days last week during that 9-day break. I came back, I forgot how to write, and I'm not even half joking. You should have seen the pile of crap column. I mean, most of them usually are, but like it was somehow a more rambling mess than my normal rambling mess self. Steve Kerr's rotations in the NBA Finals have always been weird. What did you think about strength in numbers tonight, Mark? Because I got 100 different thoughts on it. I need someone to cogently put together a train for me so that I can just hop on. Did strength in numbers work? Kerr played 12 dudes tonight.
It didn't work, but it didn't like fail, right? The second quarter stagger unit, which we should talk about. I mean, DeMarcus Cousins played in his first game since leaving game two in the first round series. But that staggered second quarter unit with, Quinn Cook and Klay Thompson, Sean Livingston, Jonas Jerebko, DeMarcus Cousins, they weren't great, but they weren't bad. I mean, save for a Jonas Jerebko air ball and two fouls on consecutive possessions for DeMarcus, like, they showed all things. Like, Quinn hit some shots, Jonas hit some shots, DeMarcus was, like, gaining a rhythm. So, you know, this might tap into the whole idea of what Steve was thinking long-term with other series of, hey, like, it's the accumulation through a series where eventually maybe these guys will wear out. Yeah. But I think the larger thing is DeMarcus. Like, he's coming off the bench. He hasn't come off the bench in a game, I think, in the 2012-13 season. Mm-hmm. And he kept that, you know, close to the vest and announced it. I mean, he had paved the way leading into his rehab that, hey, integrating him after in a finals game is going to be complicated for all the obvious reasons. He's been off for, you know, more than a month and a half. He missed like 14 straight games. He had already shown some, you know, mixed signals of can he adapt to playoff basketball. And so I think Steve handled this well. Like, if he's going to bring him off the bench, just do it off the jump. And it's not even about assuaging DeMarcus's feelings, because it doesn't even matter at this point. It's the NBA Finals, and if like he wants to raise a stink about it, well, shame's on him.
Yeah, good luck with that next contract. Guy who brought up being disgruntled in the NBA Finals.
Right, but I think the fact that Steve is bringing him off the bench, I think in a way it allows DeMarcus to build a rhythm a lot easier because he's not playing with the All-Stars. You can make the argument if he's playing with the All-Stars, the focal point of pressure isn't on him, but maybe he also slows them down a little bit. Where with the second unit, he feels comfortable being the featured guy, and they can kind of change different styles. And I don't want to say he played great. I don't want to say he played poorly, but he was one of those guys that he played minutes, and it's all about moving forward. So,
yeah,
you know, at the end of the day, he had what? 8 minutes off the bench. He only played that first rotation to open the second and fourth quarter. I'm curious to see in game two, to what extent can he expand those minutes? And then on top of that, what does that do with the entire center rotation? It seems like Kevon Looney is the guy on the center depth chart, but Steve seems very adamant of not wanting to start Kevon because he wants to keep that bench rotation fluid. But does he keep Jordan Bell? Does he go to Andrew Bogut at some point? That's going to be very interesting. And also, it's going to be interesting how that ties into the allocation of minutes for DeMarcus.
I think the Bell decision to start him was the right one. I don't know if I put a lot of stock into Steve and the Warriors coaching staff's thought of, well, we don't have Andre Iguodala coming off the bench, so we need a steady head to come off the bench. And frankly, your only option at this point for that is Looney and Livingston. They liked it when they had three guys like that. They only have two. So you don't want to go down to one, especially with the way Sean has been playing, if we're being totally honest. He's really been fighting it all year. That said, you know, I wasn't wowed. It was nothing really that impressive. I guess he did have a nice drive to the basket, but Bell didn't really do anything for me one way or another, and he's kind of a ticking time bomb out there on the defensive end. But I get it, though. He's a guy who can play on the perimeter. You can sort of kind of trust him in pick and roll, so he's not a complete liability when Leonard and Gasol do that 1-5 switch, or I guess 3-5 switch. And you know, Gasol's going to hang around the three-point arc pretty much the entire game. They like Siakam down at sort of the dunker spot, so you like that defensive versatility. You're going to play Looney the 28 minutes, the 30 minutes that you get. He doesn't seem tied to anybody, so I guess in theory you can say he should start, but I don't really, again, going back to the smart guy off the bench thing, and frankly, who the hell else are you going to start? I don't know if I agree that Cousins was sort of milquetoast in this game. I agree in the sense that he did some positive things on the offensive end, but I was going back through the film. Holy Toledo, were there some bad defensive plays.
Yeah.
And that's to be expected. He wasn't a good defender before he took, you know, 9 weeks off with injury or whatever. I can attest as a big man myself, not certainly to any level of DeMarcus Cousins, but big men aren't good if you don't give us some cardio for a while. Like Draymond Green can attest. I think any man who's probably above 6'6" and kind of has the stockier build, as DeMarcus Cousins certainly has, because he's a refrigerator of a center. Yeah, it's going to take him a while to sort of get back into it. A while meaning like the NBA finals are not going to happen for him in the way that he's never going to be 100% in these NBA finals. But the defensive possessions, I can't imagine that the Raptors don't think that maybe that's the one area that they can even capitalize on even more. If he's out there, just you run the same damn play every time. He can't stop it. They were running basic high pick and roll with a little bit of a Siakam would go from one spot to the other at the dunker spot. And Cousins was just stuck in no man's land every single time. And the Warriors really couldn't do anything to stop it because the Raptors do have good spot-up shooters that you can't completely sell out from. So I don't know. Defense is everything, obviously, in the NBA Finals. You like the fact that Cousins is coming in and giving that second unit, which, oh boy, I mean, you think back to those minutes that they played against the Blazers. Whoa, those were rough in terms of watching everybody kind of run around for 23 seconds while Klay Thompson shoots a contested off-balance 18-footer at the end of the shot clock. It's nice to have a dude you can just give the ball to and say what you will about Boogie. That guy can score. And his passing game, as I said earlier, was on point when the Raptors did collapse, but man, it's going to be rough. And in terms of maybe starting him, I just think that's playing with fire. So I think you're just going to probably see Bell for the rest of the series because ultimately the right play is to go with Draymond at the five from the get-go. I can't even recall too many minutes where Draymond was at the five tonight. That's the play, but I don't think you start that way because ultimately that means that someone else has to go into the starting lineup. And Mark, I'm looking at this right now. Who would that be? Like, who? I mean, Kevin. But McKinney only got 8.5 minutes. I actually thought that this would have been a really good game for McKinney. I thought he played well. Maybe that's somewhere that the Warriors can go and say, okay, Alfonso, let's bump it up to 13-14. Take some minutes away from Jonas, though they do like the spacing, and I understand the matchup there. Jacob Evans got 3 seconds just so that guys could get a rest and not pick up a foul. But maybe not 17 minutes from Sean Livingston. Maybe that's a point of diminishing returns, but this is where we're at now. You always make the trade of depth for Kevin Durant. That is a trade you make 100% of the time. But when you don't have Kevin Durant, this is what it looks like. Now you don't have another superstar, and you're really trying to scrabble together something pretty weird with the rest of your roster, and you're counting on Alfonso Dan McKinney, who's been awesome, but this dude was playing in the second division of Luxembourg a year ago. You're counting on Alfonso McKinney to give you quality minutes. Meanwhile, Patrick McCaw, who should be filling these minutes for the Golden State Warriors, hit like a really big three-pointer in this game, and the narrative continues. I didn't think we'd see McCaw in this series. Nick Nurse out there trolling us all. What did you think from Toronto's bench? Because McCaw came in, hit a big shot. It seemed like he just replaced Norman Powell. You didn't get that great of a run from Serge Ibaka, but Fred VanVleet just continued his exceptional play. He was so good in the late stages of the Eastern Conference Finals, and now he just continues it again. And the shot that he made, I think, in the fourth quarter where it bounced in and out, it was like that Kawhi Leonard Game 7 shot against the Sixers, off balance, end of the shot clock. It was that kind of typified what kind of a night it was for the Raptors when that nonsense goes in. Is this something that the Warriors should be worried about going forward, or is this just kind of another one of those you tip your cap and say it was all happening for Toronto tonight situations?
Well, I think totality, yes, I think the Warriors shouldn't feel concerned, but as far as how they match up on the bench, I mean, I think Fred VanVleet is the real deal.
Oh, yeah.
So he's going to be that guy that gets buckets off the bench. And, you know, the Warriors just frankly don't have that. I mean, their only consistent bench guy is Kevon Looney, and he's not.
You're telling me that Kevon doesn't get buckets?
He gets rebounds and hustle points and everything else that makes you proud.
Run the offense through Looney, baby.
Yes.
That's all I'm saying.
Yes. You know, the other interesting thing as far as the bench and just the rotation is, you know, there is a question on Andre Iguodala.
Yes.
Like he started limping toward the end of the game after he was hitting the floater. He got subbed out. Now, Steve Kerr said he's fine. He thinks he's okay. Andre Iguodala insisted afterwards he feels fine. He thinks he'll play game two. In fairness to it, they're going to evaluate him Friday. Mm-hmm. I guess it's encouraging on one aspect that they didn't even have like an official injury listed on him. But it isn't encouraging because it's Andre Iguodala, and he's 35, right. And, you know, facetiously or not, he's always had these different injuries that he's had to monitor in the last few years. And I think, unlike how it has been during the season, even in this Portland series where they sat him out immediately, I don't think that they'll do that because it's the NBA Finals, and especially don't want to leave anything to chance down, you know, 0-1, yeah. Entering game two. But could this be something that leads to something worse later on in the series where even if he's trying to fight through it, they can't play him? Or say it just makes him play limited minutes in game two. Who's going to eat those up? I mean, Alfonso McKinney is the number one candidate. I love Alfonso's game. He's a really good rebounder, but everything else, like he's kind of a wild card when it comes to hitting a three. Mm-hmm. He has good defensive efforts. His execution isn't always there. So, yeah, I think that's a question mark in it. And then the obvious other one is, when is Kevin going to come back? They should still have enough to beat this team. But, again, it just goes down to there's not really that margin for error that they used to enjoy. And it doesn't seem like he's going to be able to play in game two. Like, he hasn't practiced yet. Steve Kerr was saying it looks like it's going to be a long shot because they're not practicing Friday. So the only real practice time he could get is Saturday.
Not a chance.
And that doesn't seem likely. But even if he does, like, will that really be enough to then come back Sunday? I mean, you're looking at the calendar.
Yeah, hey, Kev, here's 40 minutes off of that injury.
You're looking at the calendar. It buys him more time to come back game three in Oakland on Wednesday. Because you have a travel day Monday. You have an actual another practice Tuesday. So, yeah, this could be interesting.
Andre Iguodala hasn't made a three-pointer in 20 days.
Yeah. 0 of 11 ever since he went 5 of 8 in game 6 against Houston.
He really did use them all up. And as much as we say, yeah, McKinney's a bit of a wild card with the three, because he is. I mean, that's an accurate statement. He went 2 for 3 tonight. The difference is you can't throw Alfonso McKinney on Kawhi Leonard. And defense, as much as we all like to overlook it, it matters a lot. And Andre Iguodala, if he can just give you anything on the offensive end, that's found money, because he's earning his keep certainly on the defensive end, even in a game where I thought the Warriors played like crap on defense. if Kevin Durant does show up in this series, the entire series changes because Kevin Durant's not going in some sort of limited capacity. He's going in as close to 100% as you can be at this juncture in the season. And again, it was just one of those games where it's like Toronto is able to dictate the pace. Whether they wanted, when they wanted to go fast, the game went fast. And that was to the Warriors' disadvantage because the Raptors were in control. When they wanted it to go slow, which was about every other minute of the game, I mean, it was all the time, it absolutely went slow. And that's also to the Raptors' advantage. I said at the beginning, way before the series started, the series will be, as most are, dictated by the team that dictates pace. And in game one, the Raptors won that in spades. Kevin Durant is the changeup. I was just watching before we came on here the final five or so minutes of game seven of the 2016 NBA Finals. It's a clip that I've been watching a lot because that was the blueprint. That is how you beat the Golden State Warriors. It's a clip that I know Daryl Morey, before he had his existential crisis that caused the beard and all the Tillman Fertitta-isms that are going on and the chaos in Houston right now, that's a game that he has watched time and time again. He built an entire roster around replicating that kind of play. And the play was you got to sell out. You got to go all in. And that means you got to slow things down. You have to take every possession to the last drop. If it's one guy who touches the ball and he doesn't pass it, that's fine. You got to isolate on offense. Maybe some pick and roll, but really it's just isolation. And then on defense, you got to grab, hold, switch everything. And it's the way that the Warriors sort of, you have to play the Warriors defense, but you have to play the Warriors defense better than the Warriors play that defense, or at least more engaged than the Warriors play that defense. And the Raptors are perfectly equipped to do that with Kawhi Leonard, with the perimeter defense that they have. Kevin Durant was brought in for a reason. It's an obvious reason, which is anytime you can trade Harrison Barnes for Kevin Durant, you friggin' do it. The other reason is, okay, now there's a changeup. There's a different kind of smoke. And if the game does get drawn into the mud and the Warriors' high pick-and-roll offense becomes too predictable, which I think it was in Game 1 because they couldn't throw another thing at these Raptors, and these Raptors are so damn good defensively, well, then you give the ball to Kevin. And now you mix it up a little bit. And Kevin starts to, isolate a little bit more. And then the Raptors go, oh, man, we got to maybe throw another body at Kevin to slow that down. Well, then suddenly there's a lot of space for Stephen Curry. And now there's, some symbiosis between the two of them. They're playing off of each other. And a lot of times that looked a little mucky when the Warriors weren't doing all so well. But when you're playing a really good defense, it always looks good when you can throw a couple of different fastball changeup. Defense is off balance the entire damn game. Right now, the Warriors, they're just throwing the same fastball time and time again. These Raptors are really good fastball hitters. And that doesn't mean that the fastball won't work, that you won't get your strikeouts, that the Warriors can't win the series. I think they absolutely can. I think they're in a really good position. But they got to play at their best level of defense. They got to turn that defense into offense. And they got to work some stuff out here. And I think that the one guy who really needs to step his game up for game two is Klay Thompson. He turned it on a little bit in the fourth quarter, making a couple shots, but most of the end of the fourth quarter was garbage time. I mean, it wasn't, but it was, where the Warriors really couldn't break through. It was double digits for most of the final five or so minutes. The Raptors had control, I would say, of the game on the offensive end. The Warriors' defense was better, but the Raptors were just making everything. And so it just never felt like Klay's shots meant all that much. He shot, I think, 40-something percent, 8 of 17 from the field. He missed a bunch of shots. And it wasn't even so much that he missed the shots. It was that so many of them, like they were in the Western Conference Finals, they were rushed and off balance. And a lot of that, you got to give credit to the Raptors. They played great defense, and you're going to have contested shots, off-balance shots. I think Steph, about 12% of Steph's total shots this season have come against tight or very tight defense. So that's a guy within about 4 feet of him, which means pretty much an arm's length. It had to be 75% tonight. Klay Thompson, it's a higher percentage, but he has to be better. He has to calm himself down a little bit. And even if it means letting the defender in a little bit more, going up straight, shooting it, he's a rhythm shooter, and he's knocking himself out of rhythm by not going straight up with these shots and kind of trying to, you know, finesse his way into the basket. That's not his game. He's a technician, and he's freestyling a little bit too much right now. Klay Thompson has to be way better, because I didn't think he was very good on the offensive end. He's always good on the defensive end, but I didn't think he was very good in the Western Conference Finals. He wasn't good in Game 1 of the NBA Finals. He's got to be better. And if he's not the third best player on the court for the Warriors, or for the entire series, so you got Curry, you got Leonard, right? Those are the stars. They're locks. And I think Leonard affected the game in a lot of positive ways, despite a bad stat line. The third best player on the court, arguably the best player on the court, was Pascal Siakam. But if that's your 1-2-3, the Raptors are going to win the series, and they're going to win it in 5 or 6. I mean, it will be an easy series. Kevin Durant shows up, he's immediately the third guy. But I got an idea. How about Klay Thompson, the guy who said that he wanted to be all NBA, the guy who is going to be in the Hall of Fame, a guy who's been a couple-time All-Star now. How about he's the third guy? How about we get a little bit something more out of Klay Thompson? He thinks that he's not a system guy. He wants the max contract at the end of the year. He should get it. I'm not saying he shouldn't, but now's the time to put up. And he just needs to be a lot better, because I just haven't seen it from him. And frankly, this is the Warriors' time of need. If he's not there for game two, we might need to start having some very serious discussions, because he ain't hurt.
No, I agree. And the thing that you mentioned about his shooting in the fourth quarter, entering the fourth quarter, he was 6 of 14. He had rushed shots. I think he made some weird things defensively, too. Or
yeah, no, that's true.
It was out of character where he was getting a technical because he like threw the ball back at the official. He almost like bumped the guy, too.
It was a weird game.
Yeah. And I don't know what's going on, like what triggered that, because before the Portland series, he seemed to be just playing his normal self. Like, there were games I know in the Clippers series where, you know, it's one of those, like, I don't want to say passive games, but there's just kind of quiet Klay games. It wasn't great, it wasn't bad. And then he exploded, I think, in game 4. And then he was right, kind of on this really good rhythm uptick. And then as soon as they played Portland, like, he just went into chuck mode for some reason.
I can tell you what happened. It was, we went back to 2015, and let's be honest, back when teams didn't know that you could switch on defense in 2015, Klay used to, the entire play was, Steph's going to try to do the high pick and roll. If that doesn't work, they're going to run more or less an Iverson cut for Klay at about 15 feet, and yeah, he'll probably knock it down most of the time. That stuff doesn't work anymore. Like, the entire NBA figured out that playbook like 3 years ago, and you just can't do it. And so Klay is kind of he's cutting into situations that, you know, aren't just, they're just not going to work. This is where Steve Kerr is really going to earn his money, though. I agree with you. Something's off with Klay. I think maybe he's just trying too much, not letting the game come to him. If I could break Klay down, you know, if I could get into Klay's head, I'd probably be a much saner person than I currently am. So, God forbid I tell Klay Thompson how to live his life. He's nailing it. It will be fascinating to see how he bounces back. The other person that I'm really looking at for Game 2, Steve Kerr. We don't talk enough about Steve Kerr's ability to be a tactician. He's one of the best X's and O's coaches in the NBA, but most of the time you don't need to do X's and O's because you got Kevin Durant and Stephen Curry and, oh yeah, Draymond Green and Klay Thompson. He's going to have to draw some stuff up. He's going to have to go and really break down this Raptors team through scheme. And I'm fascinated to see if he can rise to that occasion. I have the utmost faith that he can, because I think a lot of him as a coach, despite the fact that not a lot of people do, be a good opportunity, you know, to show that off. Now's the time. Haven't had to see it a lot over the last 5 years, but we got to see it now, because if the Warriors go back to Oakland down 0-2, not saying it's all over. Series doesn't even start until the road team wins, but man, that is a tough hill to climb with or without Kevin Durant. We got 2 days, though, in between Game 1 and Game 2. Plenty of time for Steve Kerr to draw some stuff up. Plenty of time for Klay Thompson to go jump into Lake Ontario. Plenty of time for you to catch everything that we have written, all of our videos, all the good stuff that's coming up on the Mercury News website and the East Bay Times website. And the best way to do that is to get the Klay deal. Klay did not have a very good day in Game 1, but you can have a great day every day with the Klay deal for only 11 cents a day. for the next 11 months, and it comes with a commemorative championship book 3 with all of Mark Medina's wonderful game stories in there. Our former colleague Dan Brown had some wonderful profiles and such. I think I came in with a hot take or two in the middle. And listen, let's be honest, they're down 0-1. You gotta make sure that you remember the good times, that third championship out of 4 years. And maybe the Warriors put it all together and get 3 in a row and 4 in the next 5, and we'll have a book for you there. But you're going to want to get in on the Klay deal now. We know a bunch of you guys have been bumping up against the paywall. We do appreciate your patronage, but we'd actually appreciate it if you paid. Like, that would be a nice thing to do. You don't go to the deli and ask for a sandwich and then complain when someone asks you to pay for it. Why would you do that with your coverage? We're here in Toronto bringing you the best that we got. We'll see if the Warriors bring the best that they got for game 2. In the meantime, you should follow Mark Medina on Twitter. That's MarkG_Medina. You can follow me on Twitter at D Kurtenbach. Our colleague Matt Schneidman, I don't know if there's an underscore or something in there, but you tweet me, I'll make sure that you know where you can find Matt Schneidman on the Twitter machine. Big follow for all you Raiders fans as well. We will have a bunch of stuff off of game 1 that you can read on all of the websites. We'll have a bunch of stuff off of practice tomorrow and the practice on Sunday and then game 2. Well, game 2, I guess, is Monday. Nope.
No.
It's Sunday.
Sunday, practice Saturday.
Is what it is. We're going to have a weekend chock full of content. You won't want to miss it. We will talk to you guys after game 2. Enjoy the weekend, everybody.